It is my personal belief that there are residents, visitors, and strangers. Residents being, I believe, entities that have been here long before humanity appeared, and in fact, may have had some hand in making us who we are today. Otherwise, we'd still be primates with bonobos, chimpanzees, and gorillas. We're not. We've been elevated. And I believe it is the residents who did this. And I know that's very controversial, but it's a personal belief. That's how I sort it out for myself. And the visitors might actually be from other worlds. And the strangers, I don't know where they're from, but it seems very frightening to read the accounts of people, documented people, who have experienced very disastrous effects, very tragic effects with their health from encountering the disturbing aspects of the phenomena. Now, this is known as the infamous slide 54, because it's the 54th one in the deck. And I promise you, I know we went long, but we're almost done. This is called informed speculation. I think it's hidden history, but let's call it informed speculation. And I'll clue you in on why it's informed. So a lot of these inter-row launch mission patches, launch logos, tend to depict reptilians and occult figures having some kind of dominance over the Earth. It's very unusual that they would show that. So I speculated, based on other things that I've learned, and I'll leave it at that, that we're reptilian beings able to manipulate primate DNA to accelerate human hybrids. Did that happen? And were some of those human hybrids people that in myth and legend we call Atlanteans? In fact, aren't we all human hybrids? After all, let us make man in our image, says Genesis. Why aren't we like apes? Why aren't we like the bonobo, the gorilla, the chimpanzee? That's matter for speculation. But did they do this? And are the accelerated ones really the Atlanteans? Did they ordain this idea of kingship and priesthood through selected hybrid families? And were they able to establish aristocratic bloodlines? Bloodlines and aristocracy are so important back in ancient times, and hybrid families, power and wealth. Did they establish that? And even today, are they exercising some kind of political power, economic control off the stage, or hidden social influence? And I'm just leaving that as it is. I'm just saying that it's informed because I wrote to CIA and said, here's why I know this. And CIA came back and said, well, we look forward to your presentation when you do this on these two slides. And I have a serial number for that particular submission, so I can refer to it when I do these two slides and expand it into a future presentation. Personally, I believe this is one of the core secrets. That's my personal opinion. Let's look at some of the logos, and I'll go through them real fast. NRL 4, Launch 4. Launches numerals are not necessary in the order the spacecraft was launched. So I'll just say that. But this is number 4. Number 6. Number 19. Number 32, the Eye of Horus. Number 35. And by the way, her name is Angelique. She was named by some folks in NRO. They said she's Angelique. I don't know where the Angelique name came from, but that's her name. And there's Angelique on an actual payload fairing for an NRO satellite. Anubis, god of the afterlife, Egyptian god of the afterlife, on NRL 38. That A stands for Atlas. AV is Atlas 5, number 23 in the launch sequence. United Launch Alliance 45th Space Wing, and I don't remember what LR stood for. I'm sure there are people in the audience that would know that. There's Anubis, Egyptian god of the afterlife, on a NRO spacecraft that U.S. taxpayers paid for. And on the spacecraft itself, now I should say the previous one was a mission patch, as you can tell, something you would sew on a jacket. On the spacecraft itself, we have three-headed dragon. And if you notice that around this official little poster the NRO put out, you have reptilian skin surrounding all of this. Reptilian skin in a circle for the O. And there's our three dragons on the Atlas V, which, by the way, the RD-180 rocket engines is thanks to the Russians. We launch spy satellites against Russia using rocket engines supplied by the Russians. And there's a constellation. I don't know if this is Draco, but if there's any amateur astronomers out there, that might be a clue hidden in plain sight. I don't know what constellation that is at all. That's 38. 39 is the octopus. And there's our octopus on a payload fairing. 49, Latin translates to the most important fall. You heard of fallen angels. And that fallen angels might have been the Atlanteans that were separated from the other humans because they were too far advanced and their civilization was destroyed, therefore fallen. I found that to be very intriguing. And Betty here is probably Betty Sapp. When this mission went up, Betty Sapp was slated, S-A-P-P, Betty Sapp, was slated to be the first woman director of the NRO. Most important fall. And here's another patch for this, or another logo. The devil you know. Vandenberg Air Force Base, the first Delta IV heavy launch, the rocket that actually launched it, from Space Launch Center number Space Launch Center number 6 at Vandenberg. Space Launch Control, maybe, number 6. The devil you know. Get your kicks on 66. And Green Door. Green Door assignments in the Air Force are black program assignments. And if you look at this patch, I don't know if it's a magician or an insect, but this patch is so intriguing because the more you look at it, you see more things into it. But I see two red eyes here, and I don't know, just looks like a Merlin, the magician hat. I don't know, but keep looking at it. And some people see insects. Some people see a magician with a Merlin the Magician hat. This red spot here over the United States is the southwest of the United States. Okay, southwest United States. What black program would exist in a southwestern state, like in a desert? Leave it at that. But these black programs are called...
It also, just real quick, it also looks like... it's holding a dagger, the golden overlay with the...
Ah, yes. Good, Jay. Dagger. I see that now. Thank you for that.
No problem.
And the U2 Dragon Lady. That's the nickname for the U2 that CIA gave her, the Dragon Lady. We had an informal UFO study group in the building. No one had a UFO account per se. You know, no one said, okay, your job is to look at UFOs, but we just encountered like instances of, gee, that's unusual. I should look into that. There are many, many more. Many, many. release anything, but
the other book, the one that you were just holding up,
yeah,
the crypto
conundrum.
Yeah,
yeah.
Is he still alive?
Oh yes, he disappeared. He's off the. No one knows where he's at.
No one knows where he's at.
I don't know where to find him. Yeah, he's a major. He was a major figure. Everyone in the building knew who he is.
Interesting.
When the years he served, if you say his name, Chase Brannon, they know exactly who he is.
Right.
He was quite the notable figure in the building. But he wrote this novel, which I tell people, read it and read between the lines. You'll be surprised at what you read.
Yeah.
From his perspective.
So does he actually pose it as a novel, kind of a bit like Secret Machines, where they say it's fact woven with fiction?
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that's the only way he could have done it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, exactly, of course. And this is, to be fair, I would argue it's the same with the Secret Machines books by To the Stars Academy. You know, there's some interesting tidbits throughout those books, and, you know, they are supposed to be fact woven with fiction. And Tom DeLonge was in contact with people like General McCasland and some pretty major players. So I think that they're definitely worth keeping in mind as well. But I'm going to definitely have a look at that book if it's available to purchase online. One last thing I had before I'll let you go, because it is it's been, you know, it's getting on here and we've been talking for a while, but in relation to possible reptilian ET presence on Earth. Now obviously I understand that this is part of your speculative approach, and no one can fully verify any of this, but are the reptilian style intelligence patches the primary data point that gives you reason to postulate on a reptilian intelligence, or are there other things that you feel strengthen that argument?
There are other things I feel strengthen that argument, but I don't have permission from those people to talk about that. It's not exactly a download.
That's okay. But there are certainly other things that you feel have given you. Yeah. Okay. You see, yeah, that is interesting. I mean, it's no secret that this is something that's discussed within the UFO community. And in all honesty, it's usually treated with a lot of controversy, and people don't want to really go there. But this subject is absurd anyway. And I think that there's always the possibility for this type of thing to exist within that space. And, you know, you've had people like Lou Elizondo recently hinting quite heavily that an important potential signature of extraterrestrial intelligence is human DNA. And as you were saying, you know, why are we not like bonobos or chimps or chimpanzees? Or, you know, we're a quarter of magnitude above anything else on this planet. How did that happen, you know?
Yeah, that's in my letter to CIA, when I just stated that. I know this, and here's where I heard it, and here's the circumstances I heard it. And I didn't put it in there. I made it speculative because I wanted the entire presentation to go through. But next time around, I can quote chapter and verse of why that might be true.
Yeah. Well,
and unclassified, that, by the way, unclassified.
Right. Right. Well, speaking of chapter and verse, I mean, you know, you look back on things like the Bible and obviously the Garden of Eden, the reptilian, the fruits from the tree of knowledge. I think in the original, it's Yahweh walking through the garden saying if they eat of this fruit, they will become like we are, which is an interesting statement to make.
Right.
They will become like we are. And you know, the reptilian symbology is just echoed through history, so that's certainly an interesting thing. John, this has been absolutely brilliant. I think people are going to really find a lot of benefit from this presentation. I'm sure it's going to spark some curiosity for the people that love technical information as well. There's plenty of good technical tidbits alongside some interesting, albeit a little disturbing, speculations of the overarching issues of the phenomenon. Really looking forward to whatever your next presentation is going to be. And maybe you will succeed in your mission of eventually getting something redacted.
I would think that the last topic we just talked about of reptilian seems to have a bad connotation here. People are afraid of reptiles. Let's just call them saurians. Let's just call them like dinosaurs from an Earth that did not get clobbered by an asteroid, and they were able to evolve and found a means of coming here from that other Earth. Let's just put it at that, and that they were the ones that you know, say, hey, look at these primates. Or, we don't have primates in our place. They never evolved. Mm-hmm. That goes down a wormhole, a rabbit hole that actually, let's see if I get that redacted.